This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Coming up Thursday night at the University of Virginia, Monroe Hall, room 130 at 7:30 p.m., there will be a healthcare reform panel discussion, and we're honored to have in the studio now one of the student organizers of the event, as well as one of the participants on the panel, Laura Hansen. is one of the organizers. She's a second-year student at the University of Virginia. And Dr. Bob Powers is a professor of medicine and emergency medicine at UVA School of Medicine. Welcome, both of you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Laura, give us the backstory on this conference and this panel discussion. Where did the idea come from? And tell us the story of what's going to happen.
Okay, I'm part of a group at University of Virginia called the Miller Center Public Affairs Public Service Fellows. And our mission is just to reach out to other university students and community members to share with them certain issues and perspectives on different public policy statements.
Yeah. So, and this is this whole thing is all about healthcare reform going on.
I'm in the nursing school, and so personally, obviously, very vested in the healthcare reform debate that's going on. So I saw a lot of other students who had similar questions to me, couldn't precisely understand the nuances of the debate and wanted an expert's perspective on it.
Yeah, like what the heck is a public option anyway?
Uh-huh.
That's one question I have because every time I hear somebody talking about it, it sounds a little bit different. So the details on the event, did I have them right? Tell folks exactly when and where again.
It'll be October 29th, so that's Thursday, at 7:30 p.m. in Monroe Hall 130 on University of Virginia's main campus.
So, and Monroe is the one that sits across the grass and faces Alderman Library.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and on the UVA map, it's number 26.
There you go. So you can park there at the parking garage underneath the bookstore on Emmett Street, and when you come up to the fourth floor there, you're right there. You just go up a few more steps, and you're right there at the building. Dr. Bob Powers is with UVA School of Medicine, and he will be one of the panelists speaking Thursday night at Monroe on grounds at the University of Virginia. So you're going to be tackling you're going to be approaching this issue, from what I understand, from a whole different bunch of angles, the policy angle, the economics angle, the ethics angle. Before we sort of delve into some of this, Bob, what is your general impression of the conversation that's taking place thus far? When you sit home and watch the news like the rest of us and listen to the news about healthcare debate and reform in America, as a physician, as somebody who practices and teaches medicine, what goes through your mind as you're watching this?
Number one, I'm delighted that it's on the table finally. We talked about this a lot in the early 90s. It died in the Clintons' attempt to reform healthcare, and it really did not get much airtime. It did not get much public recognition, very little public debate for the next 15 or more years. And those of us who've been teaching it and thinking about it and living through it have sort of felt like we were laboring in the dark for a long time. Now it's out in public. It's all over the place. And so, number one, I'm delighted to see people discussing it. The tenor of it has wavered all over the place. It started out rational. Over the summer, it got extremely heated, irrational in some cases, very violent in terms of opinions that people were expressing, lots of ignorance, lots of misinformation, lots of very passionate pleas on both sides. We seem to have swung now back toward the rational realm of it. I think people got out their fears and concerns, and a lot of the ignorance and fear has been dispelled by accurate information. So we're back talking about what needs to be done and why.
Yeah, and that's what will be happening Thursday night with this panel discussion, Healthcare Reform, Policy, Economics, and Ethics at the University of Virginia. It's Monroe 130 at 7:30 p.m. Bob, we've enjoyed many wonderful conversations on this program with Tim Garson about his views on healthcare reform. What do you think are the biggest misconceptions that people have that would make you yell at the television set or the radio that people just clearly don't get it? And for somebody who's literally on the front line in medicine like yourself, what help us now understand perhaps what are some of the misconceptions you think that really need to be addressed? So that we can properly address the problems and the challenges that we face in this country with healthcare.
One, I think, would be either the concept that the government has no business in healthcare, or the fear that if the government gets involved in healthcare, they're going to ruin it. To address the first issue, the government's in healthcare. It's in healthcare very deeply and has been for a long time. about half of the money we spend on healthcare comes in some form from some government agency in the United States. Each time the government has gotten involved deeply in healthcare, the outcome historically has been that the patients that they get in to advocate have done better. Government intervention in healthcare has resulted in better access and better care for the groups they've targeted. These examples being the Veterans Administration, the Indian Health Service, the Public Health Service, Medicare and Medicaid. In each case, the government has targeted a group of people who were left outside of the realm of good health care, helped them get into that realm, and has improved their health and outcome. Those people out there who are afraid that the government is going to hurt them by interfering in their health care probably don't realize that they have, in essence, more to gain than to lose.
Interesting. And, yeah, of course, we hear all the time from so many people who feel very passionately about this issue, screaming left and right, get the government out, it'll be much better if you're not involved. And yet I've read and I hear scientists, and again, here's another one sitting right in front of me saying, that's not really how it happens. I mean, there are very good things that can happen if we do see the government get more involved in the healthcare in this country.
And you'll notice that no part of this debate seems to say, well, we have to begin by dismantling Medicare, dismantling Medicaid, closing the Veterans Administration, and abandoning the Indian Health Service and the Public Health Service. Those are all forms of socialized medicine. No one out there, even the most vitriolic anti-government people, are saying we should close them down. And there's some irony in that. If socialized medicine is bad, then why do we support all of these socialized programs? The other example would be military medicine. We have a wonderful network of hospitals that cares for soldiers on active duty overseas and in the United States. That's as pure a socialized form of medicine that you can get. Those are government-operated, government-owned, and government-administered facilities. All of the doctors and nurses work for the government in those. That's pure socialized medicine, yet it's very popular, and yeah, they do a very good job.
Yeah, Walter Reed is one of the best places in the country. If you're sick, send me to Walter Reed.
Yep. We have a magnificent hospital in Germany that takes care of wounded soldiers. We have all kinds of hospitals all over the world that take care, very good care of wounded and active duty soldiers for all of their ailments. So there's a disconnect in the debate. If government is evil and can't do anything right, those who are advocating getting them out of healthcare should get them completely out of healthcare, and yet they're not advocating they get out of all of these parts of healthcare that they do a nice job in. The government ought to be able to do a good job helping those now who are not getting the big benefit from our healthcare system.
We're honored to be talking with Dr. Robert Powers of the University of Virginia. He's a professor of medicine and emergency medicine. And as you understand it, what is the public option, this public option we keep hearing about? And I know the definition's a little slippery in Washington right now, but as you understand it, what is it and what would the advantage be? Like, why would we need this, whatever they call it, this public option?
Public option is a general term for a number of different types of insurance that might be offered to citizens that would be underwritten or sponsored by the government. This debate is going and moving so quickly that you have to every morning get up and find out what happened the day before.
Yeah.
So you can talk knowledgeably about it. I did hear a list yesterday that they've now broken down the public option into things like the robust public option and the default public option. So there are going to be lots of different types of public options. But in general, it's a health insurance plan underwritten or partially underwritten by the government to enable people who now are priced out of the market to get into the health insurance market. Medicare is a public option.
Yeah.
Medicaid is a public option. And so it would be similar perhaps to those programs, but with a broader scope, hopefully targeting people who are now uninsured or underinsured to get them inside where all the good health care is.
An option is the key word. Nobody's forced into this. This is just would be another option on the table. And I guess a lot of people have a problem with the fact that it would then compete with the existing private options. And it's the philosophy that if you can go in and compete with the private options, you might force them to bring some of their costs down? Is that part of the logic?
Yes, I think you'll find that many of the people complaining about this are the people who would have to compete with it, and that people who would benefit from a public option are generally in favor of it, and that is a large group of Americans, somewhere between 50 and 100 million, who are either uninsured or underinsured right now. The people who are not in favor of it are the people who are benefiting from the current circumstance. I begin with the insurance companies. And to some degree, maybe people with very deluxe private insurance who are beneficiaries of the largesse of the system rather than having to knock at the door and take what's left over.
What about the, and we're talking with Dr. Bob Powers of the University of Virginia School of Medicine, what about the economics of the issue? And this will also be an angle that the panel discussion will look at this coming Thursday night at the University of Virginia. A lot of people are saying, you know, this is way too expensive. There's no way we can afford this. The economy's bad. We shouldn't even be talking about this.
It's always interesting to look at history and look at the times we haven't had any money and what we couldn't afford. I have a lecture on this that I've put together and given for almost 10 years, and I find that I have to continue to change the slide of times that we haven't had any money, that we all of a sudden had a lot of money when we needed it. And I would begin with the tax cuts that people call them the Bush tax cuts that came in the early part of this decade. Not really fair to call them the Bush tax cuts because they were voted for by some Democrats in Congress as well. But there was a time when the government wasn't overflowing with money, but all of a sudden there was money to give back to the rich, tens if not hundreds of billions of dollars given back. Another time when we had no money was when we, also during the Bush administration, reformed Medicare. Medicare had no prescription drug benefit. The federal treasury had no money to pay for a reform. Nonetheless, we reformed it anyway and just kicked the financing down the street and are now faced with a huge bill that was enacted, or a huge bill that we have to pay for a policy that we put into place without the ability to pay for it. Other examples, the bailout of Wall Street. It came at a bad economic time, don't have any money in the federal treasury. All of a sudden, we've got $600 billion or whatever was given as part of the TARP funds and the bailouts. And the last one, the obvious
one. A lot of which has gone to bonuses and investment in China. That most people don't realize that.
Yes, and that's maybe particularly galling if that's true. But remember, a month before that, we had no money. And then all of a sudden, we had $600 billion or whatever that money was. Yeah. The other obvious example, which is a touchy one, is the Middle East wars. No matter where you sit on the political side of those, nobody could argue that they haven't been expensive. And we had no money for health reform, and then all of a sudden we had hundreds of billions of dollars to spend on a war. My point here is we have the money for things we really want to do. We're able to find the money even when it appears we don't have it. So we have the money for health care reform. We've had the money for other crises in the past. This is approaching a crisis now, if not being in a crisis. We have the money. We'll just have to reappropriate it or move it around or simply find it in another place. But we've got the money.
Dr. Robert Powers is a professor of medicine and emergency medicine at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. He's one of the speakers this coming Thursday night in a panel discussion, Healthcare Reform, Policy, Economics, and Ethics, organized by the Miller Center of Public Affairs Public Service Fellows. And Laura Hansen is a second-year student and a nursing student at the University of Virginia who helped to put this together. And this is October 29th, Thursday night at 7:30. It's free and open to the public. It's located. It will take place in room 130 at Monroe Hall, which is right across from Alderman Library. Thank you both for being here. I've enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.